Welcome to Going Beyond Medicine with Elaine Grohman. Conversations with people who are working to make a difference in our world. Now here's your host for Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio, Elaine Grohman.
Good afternoon. This is Elaine Grohman on Empower Radio. And the show is Going Beyond Medicine. And as always, I love to bring people to the airways who are doing really important work to help us change the way we look at ourselves and how we do the things that we do in life. And today, my guest is Dr. Rita Benn. She is the executive director and co-founder of the Michigan Collaborative for Mindfulness and Education. She is also the director of the Faculty Scholars Program in Integrative Medicine and is a research investigator at the University of Michigan. Welcome to the show, Rita.
Thank you, Elaine. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. And I want to just get right to it. Tell me, what is mindfulness, first of all, and then how is it that you're bringing it into the educational system to really help to make a difference for kids and the faculty?
So mindfulness is really a quality of our awareness, of attention, of learning how to really pay attention to present moment experiences with all of our senses. And when we're able to do that, then we are able to focus our attention more accurately, and we are less likely, you know, to be anxious about things that have occurred in the past or things that might be occurring in the future, because we're really able to just really tune into what is happening right here and right now. And in education, there are so many issues that are bearing on children's ability to learn and to be present, given their family circumstances or peer situations. And so mindfulness really allows them to have a tool to de-stress when things are problematic, when they perceive that things may be more challenging for themselves, and to be able to better gain some self-control over their emotional life.
Great. So Rita, when would you say that mindfulness became more of a focus in our awareness for the need of it, especially in education, but certainly we need it in our own personal lives? But when was the focus really brought to the attention for the need of it in schools, would you say?
Well, it's been ever present.
Yes.
It just wasn't necessarily called that.
Yes.
But I would say the last 10 years, there's been more attention paid to the impact of how it might help both students and both teachers.
Okay. And what would you say that different, like, frightening events that have happened in schools maybe have been a driving force, like the unfortunate shootings and things like that? Or do you think that it was the pressure of children needing to really be pressured into doing really well on tests? Or was it a combination of things, do you think, that were really the impetus for the stressors to be so overwhelming?
I think it's just more the recognition of the stressors that are current in the educational environment. So I think it's a combination. I don't think we can really attribute it to one particular factor.
Okay.
I think that there's just been, with certainly with more of an economic downturn in our lifestyles, in the pressure to achieve through the teaching to the test, to the reduction of recess and the arts, so that there's not an outlet for students to really explore, their talents and abilities, and to really release some of that energy that they might have. And also with the larger class sizes, so that there's less money coming down towards education, and then teachers' responsibilities for having to now take care of all kinds of children in the classroom. It used to be a long time ago, when kids had higher learning needs, the need for more focused attention, a lot of times they'd be taken out of the classroom, or there'd be additional supports available to the teachers to help them. And that has shifted in the last 20 years for certain.
Yes. So tell us about the Michigan Collaborative for Mindfulness and Education. I'm really intrigued about that. And I know you've been doing so much work in trying to help people in education really understand the importance of mindfulness for themselves as well as their students.
For sure. So there's always been a push, actually, in schools to help students become more aware of their their sense of control, you know, their boundaries, their what triggers them, which we might call social emotional learning. So to pay more attention to that aspect. And so mindfulness fits right under these, the development of these social emotional competencies. And we found that when programs are initiated in schools that address the social emotional learning needs of children, academic achievement is increased as well. So mindfulness is a wonderful opportunity to be incorporated in the school system that can have those positive benefits. So we, 4 years ago, several of us who had an interest in education and in mindfulness thought that it'd be a great idea if we can bring more awareness of the need for this type of work in schools. So we formed a nonprofit, a 501(c), and we thought we can sort of bring programs to schools and to teachers so that they could learn more about mindfulness.
And how is that being received now, Rita? Again, my guest is Rita Benn. She is Dr. Rita Benn. She is from the University of Michigan. She's the director of the Faculty Scholars Program in Integrative Medicine. She's a research investigator. But right now we're talking about the important work that she's doing as executive director and co-founder of the Michigan Collaborative for Mindfulness and Education. So, Rita, how is this being accepted in and how are you bringing it into various educational facilities? And is it just one more thing for teachers to do, or is it something that they're craving themselves?
Well, I think once teachers become aware of what it can do for themselves, then they are totally bought into it.
Right.
I mean, you know, the research shows, right, that for the last 30 years, there's been a lot of research that's looking at the impact of mindfulness on physical and mental health for adults. And, you know, without a doubt, a regular practice of mindfulness meditation reduces anxiety, reduces stress, reduces depression. So if teachers can learn that capacity to calm themselves in periods of stress, to notice their reactions so that they could respond more to the needs of what's going on in the classroom, then we also find that the classroom climate has improved, that there's actually more time for instruction and less time for instruction because there's less time spent on classroom management because the teachers know how to attune more sensitively to what the needs are of the students.
Mm.
Teachers, as a matter of fact, which I learned recently, have the highest level of burnout of all occupations, you know, 1% higher than physicians and nurses, actually.
Wow. So I guess it's really not surprising, is it, with all of the things that they're meant to juggle, language
exactly.
Problems, you know, social problems, poverty, or, you know, there's so many things that teachers are meant to wear many hats, and that's not really what they went to school for.
No, they didn't. And actually, in their pre-service education, like when they're trained to become teachers, a lot of time is spent on teaching subject matter.
Yes.
Right? But
yes.
Not necessarily taught about what are the developmental issues that are occurring in kids' lives. And they haven't learned that much about social emotional needs.
Right.
That wasn't their forte. That wasn't within their purview of
right.
learning. So
right.
it's on the job that they learn, you know, how to manage a whole classroom and then how to attend to each child. And usually within the first 5 years of teaching, there is a huge attrition of teachers. And so if we can, of course, as a public, if we can be more supportive of our teachers, that would be of great benefit. But if teachers themselves can learn how to take care of themselves, which is really what mindfulness is all about, if they
yes.
can learn how to take care of themselves, then they will be more present to teaching in the classroom.
So, Rita, let me ask you, do you then go to boards of education to present this to them so that, you know, the teachers are kind of caught between a rock and a hard place sometimes because they're being asked to do things and often at their own expense, sometimes even with paying financially for things that, you know, should be given to them as part of what are the needs for the students in the schools. So are you approaching the boards of education and saying, look at what we need to do to support our teachers, or are you going to the teachers themselves?
So we haven't yet gone to boards of education. You know, we're just a small number of people, and right. we're all doing this on a volunteer basis. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of been word of mouth. Has been a big strategy of ours. And so schools are learning about us, and then either the principal or a teacher or a superintendent is calling up and asking us what we're doing and how we might come and help. Mm-hmm. And then what we do is we go into, we usually start with a presentation to the staff or to the staff. Sometimes we've gone to what's called an intermediate school district, which is an educational body in various counties responsible for really the transmission of funds from the state to the local right. educational mm-hmm. Schools, and also they provide professional development. So we go to them or to the schools, and we present information on how mindfulness can benefit both themselves, both the staff, and how it can benefit the students. And then if there's interest, we figure out if there's ways that we can provide training for the staff, followed then by training in the actual classrooms. Mm-hmm. So we go into, when we're training teachers, we might meet with them for 8 weeks after school for 1.5 to 2 hours and teach them all about mindfulness so they can get some awareness of how it's impacting them personally and professionally and allow them to see certain things that might come up for their students, so then they have a little more self-compassion and empathy for what's going on. And then we go into the classroom, and we have some of our facilitators model some lessons on mindfulness to the students, and so that teachers can see how it is that they could then practice in the classroom using these techniques for their students.
Well, as you know, since you're so deeply involved, and again, my guest is Dr. Rita Benn from the University of Michigan, and she is the co-founder and executive director of the Michigan Collaborative for Mindfulness and Education, which is a 501c3 that is really seeking to bring mindfulness into the K-12 educational system. And I'm wondering, Rita, is... When you're asked to bring this to the various teachers, is this something that the school board or the PTA or whoever it is that helps to defray the costs for the teachers, or is this something that they need to purchase on their own, or how does that work?
So there's been a number of strategies that we use. Sometimes a school district will provide the costs, because every building gets professional development monies for their staff. Mm-hmm. And there are also what's called school improvement plans that each building and each school district has to develop, usually targeted, of course, to raise the achievement gap or to raise the achievement of their students. But in one of their goals can be to increase social emotional awareness, to reduce the number of behavioral issues that come up in a classroom, or reduce detentions and suspensions. And mindfulness is a strategy that can do all that. So when they have these as some of their goals, then the buildings and districts are able to allocate some monies towards that, which can then be spent to purchase the training time for our facilitators to come in and do the kind of work. The other way, a couple of other things that we've done is we bring in professional speakers from across the country and once or twice a year, and we hold also retreats where teachers and parents can have an opportunity to practice mindfulness. And whatever funds are left over from those putting on those events, then we use to try to help support schools to support this kind of training for their students. And we write grants. We just were fortunate enough. There was a grant request for proposals. Particularly, this happened to be Grosse Pointe Schools, but it was through the Community Foundation for Southeast Michigan, and we applied for some funds to provide training to middle schools there. And we did get some funding to do that. So there are ways that we could then be able to cost share whatever the fees might be to come into the school.
Well, a little bit later in the hour, I want to really get into what is it you are actually doing and how, if you could give us an example. But first I want to ask you, because You had mentioned that there is always a desire for proficiency in the students, but are they kind of looking that as their goal? Or are they looking at, I'm sure that there's a variation in why people are seeking you out, but are they recognizing that it's that the kids need to have play and they need to have quiet time and they need to have activity and movement in order for their brains to function properly and for them to be able to make spatial relations and understanding of all of that and be collaborative? What are you finding are their primary goals? Are they looking for proficiency? Are they looking at a healthy, resilient child?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. You know, it's and it really depends on the school district. Mm. I mean, ultimately, I think all educators are looking for students to become resilient.
Yes.
Right, and to be resilient. However, you know, they're rewarded, right, for academic achievement.
Yes.
And for raising the test scores.
So the teachers are rewarded.
The teachers are rewarded, and the buildings are rewarded for that. I mean, that's our culture. Right? High academic achievement, even though it might show that to be a successful adult really doesn't necessarily require the, it's not necessarily, you know, IQ that results in whether you feel good about yourself or you're successful in life. It's really how savvy are you in being able to be self-aware of what's going on and navigate the relationships that you have amongst people. And be, you know, people remember, right, how you make them feel, not what you did.
Exactly.
So the, you know, we often say, some of us, that, you know, the F word in education is feelings.
Mm.
And, you know, we as a culture have not been trained to how to understand our emotion and our emotional life. And until we do that and really have some understanding and control over that, then we're not going to be able to deal with whatever life challenges bring us as successfully. So I think there's also now a push in education, also particularly in schools that where they see a lot of violence in their communities, to become what's called trauma sensitive.
Mm.
And they see mindfulness as a strategy to help in that regard.
Okay. Well, I think as we both know, since I had the blessing of having you not only as a colleague, but as a friend, that we really need to look at how do we bring mindfulness everywhere globally, because we're so stressed as individuals in what we see and what we hear in the media, and certainly children really not having the experience of life of knowing how to differentiate, you know, what is happening in their personal life, what is happening in the world, what is happening in the stressors that they have within their own home. Are you finding, Rita, that as people are learning more about mindfulness and they may be initially driven to the desire of learning about it for their school situation, but how are they seeing that it's impacting their own lives personally?
You know, for most people, it has a profound impact on their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
For those people who become committed to practicing, you know, people say it's transformational for them because they have never taken the time really to explore what's going on, what motivates them, and what the impact is of their own interactions
mm-hmm.
with others. And we are, because everybody is just so busy, busy, busy. You know, for an example, even just, you know, your cell phone, right? Our cell phones that we are so addicted to right now. As adults, it's hard for us to put it away, right? So, and our expectation is that our kids should put it away and not look at it and not be as tied into it. So, but until we can model and see what effect it has on us, then we're not able to deal as effectively as we can with whatever instruction or advice or suggestion we offer our kids.
Mm.
So people do find training in mindfulness to be a transformative practice once they are willing to practice it and take the time to look.
Like anything new,
Elaine, you know, it takes... It takes a commitment to want to change or to really not change, I don't want to say change yourself, but to look at yourself and be willing to create some new habits for yourself.
Yes.
And mindfulness is all about, is part of that process, right? Mm-hmm. Putting yourself as a priority too. And, you know, we, especially as women, have not done that. We tend to put everybody else as a priority. And until we start to take better care of ourselves, we're not going to be as effective in taking care of our patients or our students.
Right. And it's interesting because just last evening I watched something on 60 Minutes about how they were showing how we're speaking about cell phones and other mechanical devices, electronic mm-hmm. devices
right.
that are actually designed, the coding is designed to elicit a dopamine response.
Yes, so I saw that too.
Yeah, it's designed to create an addiction. So
right.
I think that we really have to, first of all, make that aware. I'm sure that you're doing that with people, is we don't really realize how important it is to learn what your mind is to begin with.
Right, and we don't anymore give ourselves very much space. You know, it used to be, I'm sure you may recall as a young child, you know, you used to just sort of go outside and lay on the grass and look at the trees and the clouds. You know, if we're, for some of us who are more privileged and, you know, able to do that and kind of just daydream, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we don't have that time. We don't give our kids even that time anymore to do that because they're so structured. So that students today, when they do studies of university students, they find that if they're alone without, you know, any stimulation for more than 10 or 15 minutes, they get highly anxious.
Yes.
You know, they have to make a phone call. They
yes.
have to look at their phone. So, you know, and if we don't spend that sort of time in that sort of free zone, so to speak, we don't know what the impact is going to be on our creativity, on our ability to be more innovative. A couple of years ago, I heard, I think it was the CEO of LinkedIn or Twitter, I can't remember which one it was at that time, and he talked about his concern for his kids. Like his young child, and I think it was two at that time, did not have any electronic devices. And he was really concerned about how he was going to limit that because of those issues around creativity and wanting to be able to have his child have not be so tied down
mm-hmm.
To that external structure.
Well, what we have to remember is, again, talking about our own personal experiences in our childhood and youth, is that play is so intimately connected to creativity.
Yeah.
Because as you're playing, I remember when I taught art, I would say to people, you know, they would be so worried about doing something wrong. And you can't play wrong.
Right.
You know,
right.
you can't do it wrong. You can yeah. only limit yourself to having expression. And we're so deeply in need of really bringing forth creative, collaborative, new ways of thinking entirely.
Yeah.
And I think that we, in our generation and our kids' generation, we have to help them to understand, because the future generations, if they're so limited by electronics, then they're going to miss half of their life.
Right, right, right.
More
right.
than that's, half of their life.
Right, yep. And that's just one issue, right?
Yes.
You know, we have all these with children now in schools, you know, because they have taken out things like, you know, recess and gym and art and music and, you know, reduced that in a lot of schools, or some schools don't even have that. They have demanded higher expectations that are inappropriate to the developmental level of the children. So, you know, in kindergarten, it's more like first grade, you know, you're expected to read, you're expected to sit for longer periods of times, all the things that are not appropriate, really, to meet the needs of children. And that creates a lot of stress,
mm-hmm.
and then a lot of stress on the teachers to have to manage behaviors, which in our age would have been, when we were growing up, would have been considered developmentally appropriate.
Right, exactly.
So, and then, of course, we have our parents who are stressed economically and, you know, who are having to work two jobs. There was just something in our newspaper here in Ann Arbor of a wonderful, wonderful teacher, very well known about teaching poetry in the in high schools. And he was taking on a second job to help make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not unusual when I've been doing teaching mindfulness to teachers, young teachers, that one of their stresses, in as much as they're trying, were trying to learn about it after school with me, they were having another job in addition to some of them having, you know, of course, their own family.
Yes.
And wanting to improve their lives.
Yes.
So it's very, it's a challenging world in which we live in right now. And but it behooves us to try to do this kind of work.
It's essential. It's essential. It is essential for us to learn how to live. How to live, once again. We're going to take a real quick break. And when we come back, my guest is Dr. Rita Benn. She is the executive director and co-founder of the Michigan Collaborative for Mindfulness and Education. And we're going to talk about the work that they're doing and how they have seen it work. And maybe even give us an example of mindfulness, how we can use it in our own lives. This is Elaine Grohman for Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Empower Radio, an entire radio station devoted to your personal development, expanding your conscious awareness, and empowering positive change. Meet our hosts and listen online at EmpowerRadio.com, on iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Stitcher Radio, or iTunes, or download the Empower Radio app for your smartphone or tablet. It's free in the App Store, and it lets you listen to our shows and podcasts on demand. Empowering people, empowering change. Empower Radio, online at EmpowerRadio.com.
All right. I know this isn't any fun to talk about, but we should. So, who's going to do what? Flashlights?
Nowhere to be found.
Where to be found? Batteries?
Dead.
Great. Emergency supply kits?
Not packed.
No. What about blankets?
We have an old towel.
Good enough. Cell phones?
May not work.
Emergency water?
Not a drop.
And what about food?
Nope.
Perfect. We all know where we're meeting if we're separated, yeah?
The library!
Aunt Joan's house.
The bus stop.
Great. And I'll be waiting here wondering where you all are. Sounds like we don't have a plan. Who's up for mini golf?
Winging it is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency. Who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
So, you know, I'm a dog, and I'm kind of new to this family, but I've noticed a trend. My humans do this thing where they go around and get all my toys and hide them in this basket, but it's always the same basket, and it's always the same place, and then they act so surprised when I find them, but I'm like, hello, that's where you put it last time. Humans are the worst at hide-and-go-seek.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and theshelterpetproject.org.
I don't believe it. My savings are gone. They're gone.
You're kidding.
Nope, they're gone. They're gone, gone.
Okay, all right. Think about it. Where did you have them last?
I remember I was home, then I took them, and then I spent them on that vacation to Aruba. Then I bought this miniature suit of armor I saw in the in-flight magazine.
And that's the last you saw of your savings?
Yes.
This is so weird.
I know, right?
Weird? Not really. Not saving now means no money later. You'd be surprised how quickly a little money from every paycheck can really add up. Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
The armor is cool, though. Oops. I think I broke its gauntlet.
You broke my favorite part.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Now back to Elaine Grohman and Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. This is Elaine Grohman for Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. And my guest today is Dr. Rita Benn, who is the Executive Director and co-founder of the Michigan Collaborative for Mindfulness and Education. And she is also the director of the Faculty Scholars Program at the University of Michigan and is involved in the Integrative Medicine Program. So welcome back to the show, Rita Benn.
Thank you.
So can you tell me about some of the research that you have done? Because I know that there's many things that you've done and you've looked at the effects of these things. And I'm really interested in also children that we often forget about are children with special needs.
Well, we did, about 5 years ago, we did a study here, where a randomized clinical trial, where we looked at the impact of mindfulness-based practices on teachers and educational staff and parents who had children with disabilities. Because we thought if we can give them some stress, it's a, you know, raising a child with a disability is extremely stressful. And often, you know, that's not the only responsibility that a parent will have. They'll have other children that they have to take care of as
exactly.
well.
And often a job, et cetera.
Right, and a job and a marriage,
right.
potentially. And teachers themselves also are having to figure out how to adapt whatever instruction to the needs of that particular child's learning style. So we did a training program and taught mindfulness-based practice to 70 parents and teachers in that situation. And we found incredible results that after learning this for over a two-month period of time, both teachers and parents' anxiety level, depression level, stress level was reduced. People were feeling more empathic and grateful and were felt more effective both as parents and as teachers as a result of participating in this program. And then we surveyed them 2 months later, and we found that those results were still maintained.
That's beautiful.
So we didn't look at the, you know, impact per se on the children, but we looked at the impact on the, you know, the professionals and the parent and the parents. And what was interesting anecdotally is they would tell us about 4 weeks into the training that if they were living with a partner, often the partners would say, I noticed something different about you. Or if they were a little bit more stressed than typically, they might say to them, I think you should go practice whatever it is that you've been learning because I've noticed that that helps you. So, you know, it definitely was having an impact on their everyday life and enabling them to cope more effectively with their situation.
Yes. And I would think by association, if the parents and the teachers are less stressed, then the children are going to feel that comfort. They're gonna feel that energetically because we know of that connection that's there. It's not implied. It's real.
Right. And there's a resonance.
There's a resonance there that really helps to set the tone for acceptance of whatever is happening.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. And, you know, then modulate and change something if something's not happening.
Yes.
In the way that you need to work, acknowledge it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So often we ignore things.
So can you give us kind of a vision of what it is that you help people to do when you're beginning to present this? What are you telling people to do actually?
So we're telling people to really pay attention to what's going on right now. So like in the same way that Elaine, that you and I are talking right now. So we would really be paying attention to the conversation and the words and not necessarily what it is that we're going to say next, for example. Yes. So even if you think of the concept of listening to another person, so often we're listening so that we can interject our own opinion right away, or we've passed a judgment in 1 minute or less to what it is somebody's about to say, and we can't wait to say that, or we're ready to interrupt someone else. So we learn about just listening with our whole being and waiting, as an example, for example, of how one would practice mindfulness in everyday life. So we would do one thing. It's really about doing one thing at a time and slowing down. And that's sort of been contrary to what we've been doing or what we've been taught in the last, you know, 20 years about juggling and multitasking. That's not helpful to us, and it's actually causes us more stress, and we are less efficient when we actually do that.
Now, again, so, my guest is Dr. Rita Benn, the executive director and co-founder of the Michigan Collaborative for Mindfulness and Education. And I would imagine that, Rita, that people are actually kind of surprised when they don't realize that they're not really listening.
Quite. And how and what it takes to actually listen. So, you know, we might do an exercise in that, you know, where, for example, if we're training in mindfulness, there's so many different activities we do.
Sure.
We help people sort of tune in to what's going on inside their mind. and what's going inside their body so they can actually recognize some of the triggers that might be going on. So if somebody is quick to anger, they may notice where is it in their body that they first feel that. And if they can gain some awareness of that bodily signal, then they may not react with the same kind of intensity. And they may see that. They may acknowledge that that's what's occurring. They may take a couple of breaths. And then they may return to whatever it is that was going on beforehand and be able to respond in a way that is with a calmer attitude and presence to the situation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we teach folks about how to tune in and how to listen with attention quietly to what's going inside, and then can we manifest that on a daily basis, either through eating or listening or talking to others, or just becoming more aware of our environment. Mm-hmm. Most often in our lives, we are on kind of an automatic, when we're not really paying attention to things around us. So take an example, if we're driving in a car even, and we may be going to a friend's house or to work, and so often we may bypass where it is that we have to turn because we're in our head. We're thinking about, you know, the future or the past, and we're really not paying attention. Yes. To what's going on. And so, you know, it's really retraining our brain to pay attention to this moment.
It is such a global need, isn't it? And certainly education is such an important place for this to be present. But I think in every part of our lives, we need to learn, first of all, that our brain is different than our mind. And we're so enamored with brain power that we negate our mind power.
And our heart.
Yes.
You know, we don't pay attention to our heart.
Exactly, because that what we feel is part of the system we know as our energy field, the aura, which is immediately connected to our mind. And I think so many people misunderstand the brain versus the mind. And we have, and I find this all the time in my own practice, that people have no idea how to pay attention to themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They have no idea how to pay attention because they've taught to negate their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
How to just, oh gosh, I'm feeling anxious. Why am I feeling anxious?
Right. What can I do about it, right? Mm-hmm. People just want to get rid of it right
yes.
away. And of course, it's unpleasant. Who wants to have that? Mm-hmm. But the more we push things away without acknowledging them or exploring them, the more it comes back.
Exactly. So how are you finding that, how quickly would you say people are giving themselves permission to actually feel what they feel and acknowledge that the chatter within their brain, within their what they call their mind? And how quickly are people recognizing that, would you say, Rita? Or does it take a little bit of time for people to let their thoughts quiet long enough to know that they can be okay no matter what they're in?
Well, I think the latter part takes a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. The ability to notice how the mind to notice the chatter in their mind, in their head, you know, occurs right away. And the anxiety that produces, that is pretty quick to see. Mm-hmm. Amongst folks. The ability for them to see that can dissipate and dissolve easily, and that they don't have to react or run away from that takes a little more time.
Mm-hmm. So Rita, I want to make sure that people are aware of how they can get in touch with you if they want to bring this mindfulness training into their schools, into their school districts, etc. What is the best way for people to reach you?
I think the best way would be to go to our website, and they can, which is at www.mc4me, the number 4. That's short for the Michigan Collaborative for Mindfulness and Education. Mm. And or they can email us at info@mc4me.org, and we will get back to them as soon as they do. We have a newsletter that we produce 3 to 4 times a year that we send out that talks about an insight that might have occurred from one of our practitioners or schools that have used mindfulness, a summary of a research article or a book for parents or teachers that might be helpful, information about the events that we're putting on or events that are occurring nationally that people can go to if they want to learn more. So it would be great to have people sign up on our email list, and then they can be more appraised, you know, also of what is happening.
So if they do sign up, then are they immediately, have access to the newsletter?
They do. They do. All our newsletters are actually archived on our website.
Okay.
And if they sign up on the web.
I'm sorry.
I beg your pardon?
Can you give that again, please?
Sure. It's www.mc4me.org.
Okay. So it's .org, not .com.
No, we're a nonprofit, so
okay.
It is. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it is.
Very good.
.org, and you know, yes, and we are actually going to put on two events this summer. We are going to do a training to teach educators and mental health professionals about mindfulness, and that's beginning July 31st. So people could sign up for that. And also for those who already have an experienced practice in mindfulness, we are offering a two-day workshop on how to use their practice in their actual work with children. So giving them a set different activities that we have found to be most successful from the variety of curricula in which we have been trained.
And can you tell us, where are these workshops going to be taking place?
They are going to be taking place at Eastern Michigan University.
Okay.
And people can go on our website as well and get more information for the actual dates and costs, and the ways in which they can register.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Because I think that that is really an important thing for people to really know, that there's ongoing support and continuing education, not just a one-time thing, and that they can continue to collaborate with other professionals such as yourself and teachers to know, well, what? How can we keep this going forward? How can we build this momentum about the need for mindfulness so that it becomes more first nature rather than second nature?
Correct. Correct. Right. Mm-hmm. Imagine if we started all of our days in school or at home just with 3 minutes of quiet time, right?
Yes.
What so that would be like.
Is that how you ask people to start, just with like a moment or two? Or how do you get people to just begin to just bring this into their everyday life, knowing that they don't have to spend hours doing it, which would obviously be a barrier to people?
Right. Well, you know, we always strive for the ideal, which is, you know, really to engage, for people who have been already taken a training program, really to practice every single day with a formal sitting or walking meditation practice, which is being quiet and focusing attention on the breath, or on walking for 20 minutes. But, you know, we say, if you can just do 5 minutes, just do 5 minutes. And certainly in the classroom, we don't do that. We would recommend, let's do 2 minutes. Get in. We ask students to get in their mindful bodies. So, you know, get their feet, feel their feet firmly planted on the floor so they can actually feel their feet touching the floor, and
yes,
feel their the bottom of their chair that they're sitting on, and just feel their breath coming in. Feel their breath coming out, and just see if they can follow their breath just for 1 minute or 2 minutes. And, you know, with kids, it's really quite remarkable how easily they are able to tune in and to feel relaxed just from that practice. They don't get, in my experience, as highly anxious as we adults do when we start to sort of sit quietly in that way.
Have you done any studies with researchers like such as yourself and scientists that really look at what's actually happening in the brain and track that as people begin to be more aware of mindfulness so that they can show what's actually happening?
You know, we have not done that. However, there have been studies that have looked at what's going on in the brain in adults, because brain research, you know, is quite expensive to do and time consuming. And what we have found is that there are actual structural changes in the brain that occur after people have been practicing for 8 weeks with a mindfulness practice that there's a thicker gray matter density, which and that the, in the area of the hippocampus, which is our seat of learning and memory, and that there is more what's called gyrification, so more spreading out of the different neurons touching each other, so there, which would imply more coherence that might be occurring. So there's, you know, there's, and that for those folks who are very experienced meditators, when they have looked at their brains, they have found more activity in the areas of positive emotion and compassion for this generally. So that we think that it's really activating our ability to relate more to others without the sense of judgment or separation of difference. So, you know, basically seeing the common humanity that we all have.
So as you're speaking of the common humanity, as I know what there's words that are so interchangeably used with mindfulness, which is an awareness of compassion. And so in your mind, Rita, how would you say that compassion is so much a part of mindfulness? And how is it that we really ought to be willing to embrace more compassion? And people, I think, sometimes misunderstand compassion with being, they're afraid if they're too compassionate, they might get stepped on or walked over or, you know, and I think that they really misunderstand that concept.
Yeah. So a couple of things. I mean, what mindfulness does is it enables you to see kind of the similarities, in my opinion, the similarities that you might have with another human being, and also allows you to let go of that self-critical piece that so many of us have, and to become more compassionate to oneself, to the suffering that one imposes on oneself, and to the suffering that's occurring that we might impose on someone else, either on purpose or unintentionally. And as we become more compassionate with ourselves, we're able to be more compassionate with others.
Absolutely.
And so we're not less likely to get stepped on. You know, compassion is limitless, just like love is limitless, right?
Yes.
The more you love somebody, it doesn't mean, you know, or love other people, the more you're going to get stepped on. You still hold your boundaries.
Yes.
You don't let go of those or your limits around what's important.
Exactly.
But it's just a way of relating to another human being that I get you, right?
Mm-hmm. And we're then less reactionary when we know and employ compassion for ourselves, first and foremost, because we have to look at how our reactions affect us.
Mm-hmm.
And when we can become more mindful and more compassionate towards others, that calms the mind to the degree that we can actually begin to not only find solutions, but collaboratively find solutions.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Correct.
Really, really important.
Right. Especially in this world, right, that we're in right now.
I'm looking at your website now, Rita, and it's really beautiful. Can you tell me about under the resources that you have? There's the newsletter archives, but there's also some audio. What is the audio that's there available for people?
Well, we have to redesign our website because this is a website we put together ourselves about 3 years ago. So we're in process of thinking how to redesign it. Those audios really were for people who have taken our trainings. We have meditations that are listed there that they can listen to in our guided practices. And our intention is to make some guided practices on the website available to anyone who wants to, you know, use them. But right now, those are for those folks who have taken our trainings so they can have continual access to those.
That's really great. And of course, with Empower Radio, and the reason Empower Radio was created was just this concept for people to begin to be much more mindful, much more compassionate. How do we empower ourselves, not with just striving to accomplish, but really a different kind of striving of how do we work together? How do we solve these problems that we have created?
Right.
You know, because we have to remember, it is humanity that has put these unrealistic expectations on ourselves and one another.
Well, and we are all part of that humanity.
Exactly. So we can't really just point the finger, because if we have willfully participated, then, you know, we can willfully participate in kind of untying those knots we've tied around ourselves.
Right. And yes, we cannot necessarily finger point or blame any one person or any one system, but it behooves all of us to really take, you know, mindful action, right? Mm-hmm. So that we can create a better world.
That's right. So would you say that mindfulness is the same as meditation? Is it synonymous?
I don't necessarily think of it as synonymous. You know, mindfulness, because you can be mindful without necessarily practicing meditation. I think of meditation as the practice of mindfulness.
Oh.
Or the formal practice of mindfulness.
Okay.
Informally, we can practice mindfulness, but it's very challenging to practice informally mindfulness if you don't have a regular practice every single day, which would be a meditation practice.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because you have to get into the personal experience of feeling that comfort within yourself first.
Correct. I mean, you can start with certain things. We teach people about learning how to be mindful with food, which mm-hmm. folks love, because then, you know, that can help decrease the amount in which people eat and what they eat once they start paying attention to their habits and their practices. So, you know, those are big ahas that folks have on a concrete, you know, everyday level. You certainly can do that. You can, you know, become mindful of any of your actions that you're doing in a particular day. And that's always helpful.
Mm-hmm. So obviously your particular focus is on education, but do you help people that just come across your website, or people now that are listening, that will be listening to this show and then the podcast of the show on Infinitum? How do you help individuals, or are you able to help individuals find this comfort within themselves?
So if individuals want to have their own experience of mindfulness, we certainly can recommend other folks or other programs where they can get training for that practice.
Good.
Some of, you know, we do know people who teach mindfulness individually. Always, it's our recommendation that you learn mindfulness in a group, because rather than individually, because I think there's so much power in hearing about other people's experiences.
Yes.
And being together. So we do recommend that, but there are other organizations. For example, I'm part of another group called the Ann Arbor Center for Mindfulness, which is a group of teachers and therapists that offer classes in mindfulness-based practice to the community.
Good. So if people want to help to support what you're doing through your collaborative for mindfulness and education, how can people help you if they want to help but they're not quite sure how to help?
Great. Well, they can, number one, they can donate. We'd love donations. You know, so there's a PayPal donation button that
okay.
they can on our website, and they can also send a check to us, and we give them a tax deductible receipt. Mm. So that would be wonderful. They can let us know that they would like to volunteer, and then we could see if there are particular skills that they might have that we can use in building our organization, because we really want to be statewide, and we are new. We've accomplished a lot in 3 years. We have now over 1,000 people on our mailing list.
Congratulations.
We've put on, I think, 6 events for folks, or 7 events in the last 3 years. We've gone into, I don't know, maybe 20, 25 schools at least that we've done presentations to. And we've done some full whole school trainings in at least 5 schools. So we're interested as, you know, much as possible to spread the word and to go do staff presentations. And also we want to cultivate ambassadors and other facilitators who have the skill in mindfulness and want to go teach in the schools in different areas throughout Michigan.
Wonderful. Well, as always, Rita, the hour goes by so swiftly, but I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank you for what you're doing for children and educators. And I hope that people really go to this wonderful website, www.mc4me.org, to learn about mindfulness and to be a part of this important work. So my guest has been Dr. Rita Benn. Please reach out to her. There's so much we need to do. And this is Elaine Grohman for Going Beyond Medicine on Empower Radio. Go out and empower your day. Be clear of your mind and open with your heart. Thank you so much.